Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
I'm Amanda Kuda, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
It is Saturday, July 4th, 2020. Welcome to episode 76 of The Path to Authenticity. It's kind of a weird Independence Day. You know, everything's so heavy right now in this country. But the good news is, I feel like we're getting closer and closer to the truth. You know, just as I feel like we should be striving to be more authentic as individuals, we do well to also be authentic as a country, which means to recognize the genocide we've perpetrated, and also to recognize that the oppression of Black people didn't end with slavery. I think as white people, we tend to forget that. So anyway, this episode features a conversation with Amanda Kuda, who's a mindset coach living in Austin, Texas. And I found her on Instagram. I don't know if it was from a hashtag or how it is I came across her profile, but I was really excited about the work she's doing. It fits really well with what we're doing here on the podcast. And she was just very, very gracious and a great guest. So I hope you enjoy it. Amanda Kuda.
Just the product of some bad seeds. Just some guys that grew in
my find Instagram to be a little bit of a gold mine for guests. I found so many different interesting people. And what stood out to me about you is your handle, which is Authentically Amanda.
Yes, that's me.
So tell me about that. What's the significance of that?
You know, it actually is a very a hard-earned title, first of all. I actually had to fight really hard to get that as my handle, and I was dead set that that was what it was going to be. Because when I started my Instagram account to document my journey and my growth, as it were, I actually had started it under two or three different names before I settled on Authentically Amanda. And I started it really with the intention of just being a no one. I wasn't intending to show my face. I was just going to post like inspirational quotes, and I was going to, you know, make a difference in someone's life. And which is really funny because I have a marketing background, and I don't know why I had that, like, I needed to be anonymous. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it though was because I wasn't comfortable with myself and who I was and where I was growing at on my journey. Mm-hmm. And if I'm remembering the timeline correctly, I started it, I started my Instagram account in the maybe mid 2016, which was a really tumultuous time for me. I had actually just moved to Austin, Texas, just about a year before, and had this mindset that Austin, Texas, granted, please know I moved here pretty much sight unseen, but mm-hmm. I had this fantasy that it was this wellness hippie town where everyone was just like maybe smoking pot a little bit, but for the most part, super relaxed and really chill and really healthy. And what I failed to realize is that Austin, Texas is also a booming tech town, which means a lot of young people getting successful really quick and having very little to do with their time or money than to go out and party, which is exactly the lifestyle I was trying to escape. I was moving from the Midwest to Austin, and I really wanted to start to elevate my lifestyle. However, if you've ever heard the phrase, wherever you go, there you'll be, that's what happened. happened when I got to Austin. Yeah, and it's so true. Like, you cannot run from yourself. You can certainly have a change of scenery that can help you to kind of level set, which I truly do believe. And I do not think that my life would have turned out the same had I tried to stay where I was. But initially, when I moved to Austin, I fell back in with the same type of kind of see and be seen party crew that I had been hanging out with back in the Midwest. And it didn't take me too long into these friendships to realize that it wasn't fun for me anymore. Even though I had really built my identity on being this kind of like Carrie Bradshaw type socialite, it was really, really exhausting, and it didn't feel congruent with who I was supposed to be and how I was supposed to show up in the world. And there was just this inner sense in me that said, you know, Amanda, you're supposed to do something really important in your life, and you cannot do that thing if you keep living the lifestyle that you're living. It just doesn't work out that way. And as, you know, the rebellious part of me said, no, 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 self, that can't be, you can't be right. You surely can like find balance here. And I really tried to scale back on that kind of party girl, weekend warrior lifestyle, but it just wasn't really working. And I was going to these wellness retreats. I was reading spiritual texts that were kind of gobbledygook going in one ear and out the other because I didn't have the emotional capacity to take them in. And so at this point, I decided, well, I want to be a teacher, though. I can teach this stuff. So I started this Instagram account with this, you know, lofty vision that I was going to have this spiritual awakening somehow while I was still going out and partying. And about the end of 2016, I had a better sense. Something kind of hit me over the head and said, nope, Amanda, you really, really, really need to take a break from drinking. And part of that was, I'll kind of backtrack a little bit. Actually, there was a little bit of an impetus. I remember in around that same time, I was dating someone who had kind of been in and out of my life a little bit and was unequivocally the most handsome and sophisticated man that I had ever dated or met. And so I really respected what he had to say. He was a few years older than me and really just was a little, you know, starstruck by his presence. And I remember one time we were out and he paused and he told me something to the effect of, Amanda, I don't feel like you're being very vulnerable with me. I feel like you're being quite calculated with the way that you act. And it kind of punched me in the gut, but also in a really good way, because it was true. I was showing up in a way that I thought people expected me to, that I thought was the right way to show up. A lot of the way that I acted was putting on a ruse because I had never learned to be comfortable with who I was authentically at my core. I had actually had a lot of shame around who that person was, just as we all do. We pick up little shames and guilts and different things throughout childhood and adolescence. And I had let that form a shell over me to where if I can show up as this most perfect version of me, the version of that people expect that has everything together, then I can't get hurt. I can't get made fun of. I can't XYZ. And he called me on it. And while that might have been really hurtful to some people, I think some would have looked at that and said, well, who does he think he is? I received it very lovingly. It was, to me, a challenge to take on this work of figuring out what vulnerability and authenticity looked like. And so from that point forward, I, you know, started back up in therapy. I started reading these spiritual texts much more seriously. And I made the decision that I could not reach that authentic place if I was drinking and partying. And I didn't really know why at that point, but it seemed very, very clear to me. So I really started that journey in earnest at the beginning of 2017, January 1st, I stopped drinking. And the intention was to only do that for a short period of time. But as I'm sure we'll talk about, the longer and longer I went, the more confident I felt, the higher sense of self-worth, the closer I felt to my authenticity. And it never appealed to me to go back to that lifestyle. So at some point I decided that I, you know, really wanted to focus my message on authenticity and living that authentic, fulfilling life. And I really think that that's what I've tapped into and what I've been able to access through many different arenas. But yeah, that's how Authentically Amanda started.
Wow.
A lot of denial, basically.
So which state in the Midwest are you from?
I'm from Missouri.
Missouri. Okay. Mm-hmm. I had a feeling you were a Midwesterner. I'm from Indiana.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, You know, it's interesting because I'm an addictions counselor. You know, that's part of what I do. And I've kind of been in that world for over 20 years. And I was just saying to someone a couple days ago, we usually don't get better when we see the light. We get better when we feel the heat.
Yeah.
Which was definitely my case. You know, it was not a good situation. Like, I needed to stop drinking. But it sounds like you kind of saw the light a little bit, didn't you?
Yeah, I certainly did. And that's a really interesting discussion and something I've had to become much more comfortable with talking about, especially when I transitioned my account to talk a lot about my relationship with alcohol. And that's, as a coach, that's my primary function, is to coach women to help them to change their relationship with alcohol. But I, you know, it was a very interesting time. This was only 3 years ago, and it's interesting how quickly things can change, because I knew with certainty, and this is a really important conversation that I want to draw light to, not to make anyone's journey more or less valid or less or more significant, but because the voice that I'm about to relate, or that I'm about to translate to you, is the voice that I needed when I went on this journey. And that's a voice that wasn't available. And it's a voice that says, listen, you don't have to, quote unquote, have a problem with alcohol for it to be a problem in your life. And 3 years ago, there was no messaging that said that. Now, of course, if you do have a problem, you're facing addiction, you're needing recovery, you need support and help, absolutely. That is an area where there are a tremendous amount of resources, and it's tantamount to, you know, admit you have a problem. That's the first, you know, the first step. But if there is a part of you that says, you know, that doesn't feel congruent for me, the voice that I want to share is, that's okay. You don't have to go down that path if that's not what resonates with you. If you truly feel that you just don't want alcohol in your life anymore, that's okay. And there are people to help you still have a fulfilling life without it. And I was convinced, because there was no one talking about it, that it was just unheard of. It was impossible. And so really seeing the light was me having this revelation that, you know what, I don't have to go down a path that's not mine to go on. I also don't have to stay on this path that's not mine to be on, because that's what's considered normal. I can make my own path where I simply choose to give up alcohol and choose to rewrite my life, void of going to AA or recovery, void of, you know, becoming super religious or whatever other stigma they might put on people who don't drink. I can actually just to choose to do this to be a healthy, whole version of me. And that's okay too. And so if anyone out there needs to hear that message, I just hope that it resonates, that you don't have to have a problem with alcohol for it to be a problem in your life.
Wow. Well, you know, we have a similar message. You know, the whole authenticity thing is a key part of both of our messages. And the way I arrived at it, you know, I've always written, and I've always been really interested in the media and worked in marketing, and, you know, always kind of known that there's a book, but not sure what it is, but knew I didn't want it to be another book about someone's recovery. And never really wanted to, although, like, I think the 12 steps are what work best for most people who want to be sober. And that's, they saved my life. What I really, but, you know, I had this career in the industry where I had all these resources that were available to me, authors I've met over the years, contacts. And so how do I use what I've learned in my career and the contacts that I have? What is, if I distill the message down to its essence, what is this really about? And it's really about being true to yourself. You know, I drank the way I did because I didn't know how to be myself. And I did exactly what you did. I showed people the parts of myself I wasn't afraid to show them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you do that, nobody really knows you.
No, not at all.
And I like that you talk about...
And you don't know yourself.
No, no. I mean, I was completely disconnected from myself. But I like that you mention that you talk about your relationship with alcohol, because that's really what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's about the relationship. And you're right. It doesn't have to be completely killing you to be problematic.
Absolutely.
And what I have found is that what I thought was going to be this huge loss in my life, because, you know, I grew up in a family where everybody drank, and like culturally, that's just what my people did. Mm-hmm. So I thought, I mean, I just couldn't imagine not going to bars and not drinking beer. And, you know, I mean, I just couldn't fathom it. But what I learned is that what I was seeking in my relationship with alcohol was connection. You know, from mm-hmm. the very beginning, you know, I wanted to be able to connect with my dad, with my brothers, with my friends. That's really what the alcohol was about. It was an opportunity mm-hmm. to connect and to share something. But when I put it down, then I learned how to really connect with people in a much more mm-hmm. meaningful way. And so mm-hmm. all of my relationships have taken on so much more depth than they ever had before. I mean, it's just a completely different framework through which to live. You know, it's so much more who I am.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. And it's not that you're so completely different of a person than who you were as a drinker, but yeah, in some ways you are. And I agree that, I mean, I have so much to say that I could bounce off of what you just said, but I, you know, the further I get away from alcohol, the more clearly I can see some of the very important spiritual and psychological patterns that we put ourselves through mm-hmm. and some of the energy exchanges that we agree to when we're drinking that mm. are completely subconscious. And that if people who are, you know, hoping, desiring, or even interested in living an enlightened life, were privy to, I think that it would change their way of thinking a little bit more quickly. And I'd love to share a couple of those just to kind of, offer a little bit of perspective to anyone who's on a path to, you know, find their authentic self or be a little more enlightened. Yeah. So what I realize is, yes, alcohol is definitely there to give us connection, but, or we're fed the lie that it does, right? You know,
right.
All of the things that we see as vulnerability, like love, connection, emotional expression, all of those things we are also told are made easier through alcohol, right? Mm-hmm. Alcohol makes the setting more romantic. It makes you feel and look sexy. It loosens up your inhibitions a little bit. Alcohol is something we bond over. Alcohol is something that gets your creative juices flowing. Alcohol is something that that helps you build camaraderie with people, or helps you feel more comfortable around people who you might not feel super comfortable around at first. It helps lighten the mood, right? Mm-hmm. So we're told, oh, actually, you don't need to learn to do those things on your own. We've got a tool for that.
Right.
And it's false, though. Every time you use a tool, it's like using the bumpers at the bowling alley, right? Every time you use the bumpers, it keeps you from learning how to actually bowl a strike, because you're never hitting the gutter. You're never, you know, right. You're going straight through. So then, of course, when the bumpers come down after, you know, 20, 30 years of you using them, and you try to bowl down the center, of course you're going to hit the gutter several times because you're just getting your emotional footing. And
but the other part of that I want to mm-hmm. say is that mm-hmm. when you're relying on something outside of yourself in that way, mm-hmm. we feel bad about ourselves. We don't believe in ourselves. You're making mm-hmm. a choice to not believe in yourself.
Yes. Excellent. You're absolutely sending your subconscious a message about your own worth that's saying, I'm not capable of doing this on my own. So we all know, like I don't have to play dare officer here. We all know that alcohol isn't very good for us. For those of you who still think that there's like antioxidants in wine, they're beneficial. Let me give you the news that there's just as many antioxidants in grape juice. So like that argument is tired. There's actually no health benefits. All of the studies that say that are like cosmopolitan studies. They're very bogus. So let's go with the understanding that alcohol is ethanol. It's a poison that you're ingesting in your body. If you're going to knowingly ingest a poison, you surely are thinking that there is some sort of magnificent benefit that's going to outweigh the fact that you're drinking poison. And so all of those benefits are kind of things we discussed. It helps you relax. It helps you connect. It helps you be more flirtatious and fun. It helps you have more fun. It helps you be more fun. And if you take and hold on to all of those concepts, kind of like you just said, and twist them on their head, what you are then inadvertently saying is, I'm not capable of being fun, sophisticated, funny, relaxed, intriguing, romantic. I'm not capable of accessing and achieving those feelings on my own. And I don't know what is a more terrible message to send to your own self-worth center than you're not capable. You don't have what it takes to perform these normal human emotions. So you need a substance to help you get there. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just and, you know, I mean, for me, where it really crossed the line was when I was in emotional distress, you know, 18, 19 years old, trying to figure out, you know, having made some mistakes about the course I was going to take in life and not feeling good about it. I was like, holy shit, you know, now I'm stuck, you know, and deep depression. And so that was when I chose intentionally to change the way I felt with alcohol, to self-medicate, essentially. And that was like the invisible line for me, I think, that I really crossed over. Because there's no, it never works.
Right.
It doesn't work. We think it does, but it doesn't. It doesn't.
No, it's a way to actually stunt your emotional growth, if anything else. If you really backtrack to the things that are hard for you to imagine doing without alcohol and consider that perhaps those are actually just areas where your emotional growth has not been allowed to fully develop. It makes a lot more sense that, you know, you've used this tool to bypass all of these actually important skills that you could and should be gaining. And so, yeah, now as a grown adult, it seems really scary to have to assert those skills that you've never, ever practiced. And, it can be really, really scary. But for me, learning to get on in the world without alcohol, without any sort of physical aid to support me, required me to rely on myself. And the truest and fastest path to your authentic self is to trust yourself and to reassure yourself that you have what it takes and that you are whole and complete as you are. And through my journey to find freedom from alcohol, you know, I could have chosen just to give up alcohol and keep living my life. That didn't feel congruent either. So I really dug in and did a lot of deep work and personal inquiry to understand what is it that I think that I thought alcohol was giving me and what is it that I feel lacking in myself and how can I really, really work to cultivate those feelings naturally. And I think I've done a pretty good job in it. And though sometimes I do still slip into my like stage performance mode, I know what's under there and I know who I am at my heart.
But what you're really saying is you're still a human being.
Yeah, of course.
Because, you know, we can't be, that's the human condition.
Yeah.
The struggle, you know? Wow. So 3 years into this. So what, in terms of, I could just go on and on about stuff you said too, but I want to hear about, like, you've talked about how it's affected you personally when you go out, you know, and you, another layer, and you talk about like the people you've come in contact with and worked with. What's that been like to take this message out to people, and what kind of response have you gotten?
Yeah, well, let me be clear that I was really afraid to start talking about this at first, because, you know, not being kind of one of the first people boots on the ground to talk about alcohol from a non-addictive perspective and to share and vulnerably show up, share my face. I, you know, there is a part of me that's like, oh my God, what if someone from high school sees what I'm posting? And honestly, I look back now, I'm like, who cares? Good for them. Like, I'm not trying to impress any of them. And what I realized is that if I have made this journey, if there was no one talking about it that I could find, then I have to trust that there are other people who need to hear this. And that is actually my moral responsibility to share what I have learned. And because I went beyond just making the decision to quit drinking, because I went on a deep, deep, deep dive into personal inquiry and spiritual development, I knew that I had something that was kind of like a process that I could replicate and share with other people. And sure enough, as I started to share this, people started to kind of raise their hand and say, oh my God, I resonate so much with that. Tell me more. Can you help me? Can you guide me? Because, you know, geez, if I would have had someone to help me navigate the stumbling blocks that I had to come across, heck yes, I would have raised my hand and said yes to that. And so I've started to automatically attract people who want me to support them, which is great because, you know, naturally I'm a coach and I had been doing business coaching before and wanted to step into something a little more personal development and holistically focused. So it gave me the gift of getting to follow my passion without me even having to really like do the marketing research and niche down. My niche came to me because I was my niche, right? And that's how most beautiful coaching and mentor practices start, that you have something that you figured out and other people need it. But even more than that, just on an energetic perspective in terms of relationships in general, I have started to vibrate at a higher frequency. And what happened when you change paths is automatically, yes, you're afraid you're going to lose all of your friends. And sometimes you do, and that's okay because you're now at a different level. And not that my friends before or people who have been in my life in the past are bad people, because I still keep in touch with so many of them and have deeper and better relationships. But also a lot of those relationships fell off to make room for new higher vibe frequencies that are higher vibe relationships that match my current frequency. And that goes for business relationships, romantic relationships, friendships, all of those things upgraded without very much effort on my own, just because you kind of start to become a magnet for what's a match for you when you do the work.
Kinda.
Yeah.
Or you do.
Oh, I mean, no, that's, you absolutely do. I mean,
I think one of the ways that I've seen this throughout my life and everybody's life who I've been, water seeks its own level.
Mm-hmm.
So where I am and my emotional growth, that's who I'm going to attract.
Absolutely.
And once I level up, then I become repelled by those people who, and I don't mean that in a nasty way. Like,
right. You're not disgusted with one another.
Like, if they're abusive people who I engaged in the past, I don't do that anymore. You know, it doesn't work for me. And they can go find somebody else to be toxic with. But also, like, the people you're talking about who, you know, what will the people in my old life think. I mean, you're also showing up as a different person, and they see you, they're watching you, and someone or some of them will eventually come to you and say, you know, what happened? What did you do? How do I, you will attract. And so it all comes out in the wash anyway, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that certainly happened. I mean, I've had, even just in the past couple of months, I come from a podunk small town. I do not keep up with many of the people from my high school, but I've been so impressed that some of them have, when you change, the people around you start to change as well, because they will shift. If they are, maybe they won't shift to match exactly your energy, but they'll see that shift and they'll start to shift a little bit too. So I've had handfuls of people reach out to me and say, Amanda, I haven't talked to you in so long. I really am interested. I really dig what you're doing. I'm just so proud of you. It's so great to see you doing, you know, what you're doing, and just like, good for you. And it's, even though they're not saying, I want to do that too, or tell me more. I want to follow the same path. It's them acknowledging like, wow,
you're being validated.
That's really cool and noble of you. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing, the flip side of that is the people who you had, who you're not at, you know, running at the same frequency anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing left to talk about anymore.
Right. Right.
You know, it's empty. It doesn't feel, mm-hmm. you know, there's nowhere to go with it anymore. So it's kind of a waste of time. You know, this mm-hmm. is what you eventually experience. And then, you know, if it's family, I mean, one of the things I've learned is to, you know, manage my boundaries differently, how I feel, and how I experience people in my life is really up to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how am I going to show up and what are my limits here and to not have unreasonable expectations from certain people, you know?
Right. So. Absolutely. I think that you have to meet, and this is with family, geez, it is so hard because you have some deep, deep shit with all of your yes, family, yes, right? Yes. There is just no way around that. But, you know, as a spiritual student as well, there are so many tools that you can use to ground yourself and just return yourself to a better energy around them.
Mm-hmm.
And with family and friends and so many people, I mean, I can give you a direct example of sometimes when you shift your focus in a relationship, the relationship transforms. And, you know, this is directly, I think we spoke a little bit about, I'm a student of A Course in Miracles. Mm-hmm. So I speak from that perspective quite frequently. And I'll give you an example of how this works out. So, 3 or 4 years ago, I had crossed paths with a young woman who we were both kind of eyeing the same guy. So automatically she was not my friend, right? And on top of that, I just like didn't like the way she presented herself, the way she talked kind of like rubbed me the wrong way. And so instantly I'm like, ugh, can't stand her. And that's not a good feeling. Like, I just want everyone to know that your authentic self, who you are at your core, is never vengeful. It is never it is a loving energy. Your authentic self is always a loving energy. So if you are ever seeing someone in disgust or hatred or envy or any of those emotions, that is always your ego self. So I had to ask myself, you know, this doesn't feel good. I don't like hating on this woman. And on top of that, I think we were approaching like Memorial or Labor Day weekend, one of those like holiday weekends, and all of our friend groups were getting together, which means I would have to spend the entire weekend with her. So I'm like, ooh, man, I need a miracle and I need it fast. And so I remember just saying this prayer out to the universe, like, you know, dear God, your universe, whoever you pray to, if you pray to anyone, like, I am not feeling good about this person. I am ready to see her differently. Help me to see her in her innocence and light, because I need to show up and be pleasant around this person for this next week. And I want to have a good time and I don't want to fake it. So I just kind of throw out this plea to the universe, and through no action of my own, other than that, I suddenly became really good friends. She approached me and wanted to start talking to me. We started having these great conversations. And for several years after that, we were kind of like attached at the hip. This person who I thought was incredibly not my person at the get-go turned into, out of nowhere, a really great friend of mine. And it's just miraculous how those things can happen. But when you open yourself to a little bit of willingness to shifting, sometimes that will happen with just miraculous results.
Well, and another part of this, what I believe is, you know, when we have that kind of response with another human being, it's informative.
Yes.
What's going on with me? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, this person is innocent. I'm projecting my experience onto this person and I'm perceiving them through my lens.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it that triggers me about this person? What is mm-hmm. it in me?
Yes, it's always a lesson.
And an opportunity to heal something.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I was going to ask you about the personal inquiry stuff, but, and I did notice you posted something and I read the caption and that's the course. I knew it was A Course in Miracles, which has helped me a lot too. Over the last couple of years, I really love it. I feel it's like, it's just something from a spiritual standpoint, the way you see the world through that lens is just something I've always kind of thirsted for, I think. And it makes a lot of things easier when you use the lessons from the course, especially relationships.
Absolutely.
So how'd you find the course?
Oh, geez. You know, I found the course. I definitely purchased it, the book, which is like, it's very large. It's like Bible size, right? Yeah. And not to compare it to the Bible, but it is a metaphysical text. So for those of you who aren't familiar, it's a profound channeled metaphysical text that's just really teaches that there are either two states in life. One is fear and one is love. And fear is false. But we've been taught to believe it is true. And we can quickly and easily make a shift in perception from fear to love if we simply align ourselves with loving energy and ask for a miracle and open ourselves up to that, because our free will would have us go towards fear because that's what's native to us. But as soon as we open up our consciousness and let someone else take the wheel a little bit, we can be realigned towards love. And a miracle is simply a shift in perception from fear to love.
You just articulated that very, very well.
Thank you. I just did it really on the fly. No, so that was really, great. It was me. It was just me speaking, you know, through my heart, because it's a very beautiful text that teaches a very simplistic message, yet in a very difficult to digest format if you are not rooted in yourself. So I'm actually rereading it right now. It took me a long time to read the course, but I'm rereading it right now. And I know that the parts that I'm reading, as I'm going through right now, are the parts that I read while I was still in my party girl phase. And it's just so profound how the message resonates so much more quickly and more deeply now that I am a clear-minded person. And so I forget what your question was, though, because I want to answer.
Well, I was talking about personal inquiry. I was asking about that. But so I want to ask you, so have you ever been to a group to study the course? Or no?
You know, I have. I actually, a few years ago, I would go, there was a group that meets here every like Wednesday night or something, and they would read and discuss. And so I did that for a while. But honestly, most of my work was self-study. Oh, I remember you asked, where did I learn about the course? So when I was going through this phase I want to be enlightened, but I don't want to quit drinking. Let's do both of those. I saw a Reiki master who really kind of took me under his wing, and he told me I needed to read Dr. Wayne Dyer's The Power of Intention. He told me it changed his life, and as soon as he read it, things started to shift. And I believed it deep in my soul. And I said, yes, I want to read that book because I want things to shift in my life. I believe it can happen. So I bought The Power of Intention. I read it, and it was difficult for someone who is just trying to open their mind to this different way of being, this more positive-minded way of thinking. This more enlightened, just nomenclature was very, very hard. And it's not actually a hard book to read now that I go back, but it was challenging at the time. And through that, I got exposed to, through Wayne Dyer, I got exposed to Marianne Williamson. Marianne Williamson, of course, is one of the most profound teachers of A Course in Miracles. And just started kind of going down that rabbit hole, like, okay, I want to learn more about this. This feels good and it feels right. And since then, it has been a tremendous part. All of these texts and teachers have been a part of my spiritual journey.
So, you know, we're all searching for something. And and if, you know, that's kind of what this all boils down to, you know, whether you were drinking or not, you were on a search. And when did that start? How young were you when you realized I'm meant for something more than this?
Oh, heck. I was, you know, if we're being honest, I was a really little kid. I remember having this sense that I was meant for something special. I remember even having little like thoughts of me being like a teacher on a stage, but it just, you know, I came from a very podunk town in the middle of Missouri. So I came from a town called Mexico, Missouri. And I, you know, I had no, there was, this is, you know, the 80s and 90s. I didn't have any concept of what a teacher looks like outside of a preacher at the church or my second grade teacher. Right. And so I remember thinking and having this sense of knowing that there was something special in my heart that I needed to share. But I will tell you, and I want to say this because I know that there are people listening who this will resonate with, that sense of having something special is also something that makes you feel a little alienated, because you can also sense that maybe the other kids who are playing with Barbies aren't like quite on that level. And I think it's also what leads you to stray from yourself, because you're trying to find camaraderie with your peers and your contemporaries, and you still have this like other sense of knowing that you can't quite explain, and your teachers and your parents don't, you know, quite know what to do with you there. So you're forced to, if you want to not be a huge weirdo, dull yourself down to the level of everyone else around.
Well, that's what you did when you drank, right? That's what you were doing.
It's the most brilliant tool to do that. And, but it definitely started much younger than that. It started probably first or second grade. I kind of had this sense that I was a little different, that I was, you know, not quite where I was supposed to be in life. And then when I met this Reiki master, I think I was probably like 28 or so, 27 or 28. And he's the one who really guided me and said, you know, kind of reassured me that the feelings that I had, like I wasn't even verbalizing that there was something special that I needed to explore. And so, yeah, him turning me on to things like the power of intention and just really kind of encouraging me to bring out that more spiritual and metaphysical side was a tremendous gift and just a reminder of who I was and what I was supposed to do that, you know, no one else was reminding me of it. So I'm so grateful and lucky that I crossed paths with this man who was able to kind of guide me towards the right way.
So how does the course factor into your coaching, mentoring of, I mean, how does it not really? I mean, if you know the course, it's just kind of there, right? It's not like, I use this, but not that.
Right. Absolutely. So the course comes in so many different ways. I think that especially in being in judgment of ourselves and being in judgment of others, which is judgment is always a fear-based approach. It's so important. And in my work to help everyone return to that loving, authentic energy that is within them. And using, sometimes I don't even say, oh, this is from A Course in Miracles, because sometimes it's hard to take in if you're not used to that world. But a lot of times I will, give my clients prayers or, you know, little things to say to help them realign with something, especially, you know, just like I did with my girlfriend, that I had to ask for help. I had to ask for an intervention from the universe to help me see this person differently. And just helping them to understand that they can ask for help. Like you can say, this situation isn't serving me, you know, my relationship with my spouse, my relationship with my kids, my relationship with this friend. I'm not showing up the way that I want to, but I'm ready to do this differently. I just don't know how. I'm inviting you in to help me. Whoever's out there listening, please help me to see this differently. And it's such a simple prayer. It's such a simple call to the universe to make. And anyone can make that. You don't have to be, you know, this well-studied student of a course to ask for a miracle. Mm-hmm. You just have to be willing and curious enough to believe that it could be so.
Yeah. You know, the thing with me, this whole path to authenticity thing, is we fall into these traps in life of, you know, with you, it was drinking culture, and me too, you know, but it also happens in the workplace. Mm-hmm. It happens in terms of marriage and becoming parents. I mean, it's like there's this script. It's already written for all of us, and we think we're only allowed to deviate from it in certain ways with only so much latitude. And that's just a total crock. I mean, we get to define ourselves. And this, to me, this podcast is about owning that and helping other people see that they can own it for themselves too. They can do whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
Because
absolutely, that,
one of my big challenges in life as a kid that took me a long time to get out of was I saw limits rather than possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part mm-hmm. of, you know, there are reasons for that, you know, the atmosphere I grew up in there, you know, but scarcity,
yeah,
you know, the illusion of scarcity. Mm-hmm. It's such a powerful thing. And we box ourselves in so many ways in life. And, you know, you can be an adult who's happy and social, but doesn't drink, and it doesn't matter what anybody thinks about that. You know?
Right.
Or it's just you so can be a single person who isn't looking to get married anytime soon or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
We get to be who we want to be.
For sure. And the thing that I think so often forget because we've taken on so much programming is sometimes we trick ourselves into thinking we're being who we want to be. And it's such a lie. I mean, I thought forever that I was supposed to be acting in a certain, you know, I call what I had, Carrie Bradshaw syndrome, because I thought that to be a successful, fabulous, sexy, intriguing young woman, you needed to be like Carrie Bradshaw, even though I knew that was a fantasy. I knew that. And for those of you who don't know, she's the star of Sex and the City. And I thought that that's the persona I needed to take on in order to have the things that she had. And that was a persona I picked up in adolescence. And when I was smart enough to know better, kind of, not really, but just think of all the little personas we take on from the point that we are children that our parents unwittingly push on us because they teach us what is good, bad, right, or wrong. And that our teachers put on us because they teach us what is good, bad, right, or wrong. Or that our friends or our aunts or our uncles or any sort of attachment or authority figure in our life teaches us from the moment that we feel like the tiniest bit of shame around something and we decide we never want to feel that again, or the time we feel the tiniest bit of pride from something that maybe we don't even like doing, but we'll keep doing it because it's made us feel connected to someone. Mm-hmm. And so we take on those ways of being that certainly people, if they had their best intentions, would have never imposed on us. But our mind is so young and naive that we just start doing it and don't really realize it's not part of our authentic makeup until we have the wherewithal to pause and say, wait a second, who was I before I became who the world wanted me to be?
Yeah. And you know, one of the things I'm thinking about all through this conversation is that, you know, you being a coach, I do some coaching. I work with a lot of young guys and not so young guys, but, this is what in large part is missing from our culture. Mentorship, mm-hmm. that kind of connection where, you know, especially with guys, like, you know, guys of different ages coming together from a place of love to be there for each other and be connected to each other because we do need it, you know?
Sure, yep.
Young men need the admiration of older men.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's just so much BS in our culture that, you know, we don't have any like real rites of passage aside from some religious practice, you know, and we're just so disconnected from ourselves. And, you know, that's what I'm doing with my work. Mm-hmm. I'm helping people become more connected with themselves,
mm-hmm.
you know? That's really what it's all about.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, who does really brilliant work around that topic? I don't read that much into it, but because I don't have a son or a, you know, right now, someone who I'm trying to cultivate like a masculine, like grow their masculinity in any way. But there's an author named Warren Farrell, who he is just the most wonderful person that you could ever hope to meet or see or hear from. And he is a PhD, a researcher, and he has tons and tons of research on the masculine feminine kind of dichotomies, but specifically how boys are are led kind of down the wrong path. And he just does really brilliant work on that topic. So anyone who would like to read more about it, or especially anyone who's raising a boy or trying to mentor a boy or a man, he has amazing, amazing resources.
Well, I'm going to look into it, because that's, you know, that's another, I'm doing a series with this show called Getting Real About Manhood. One of the episodes came out today. Because that's one of my passions. We need to teach each other. We need to do a better job of teaching each other how to be men. And, you know, the, we've just kind of been on cruise control with it and have, gone along with a lot of assumptions, a lot of them based on desensitizing ourselves from emotions.
Absolutely.
With alcohol and a million other things.
Yep.
But it's fake. I mean, it's fake. And you know, just like going back to the social lubricant aspect of alcohol, right? And this came up in another conversation in an episode, I think, recently, but you know, if you're a guy and you're going to approach a woman to let her know that you're, it's a vulnerable act.
Yeah.
And to go to a bar and do that where, you know, everybody's altering their consciousness. That's what's happening. Yep. Everybody's altering their consciousness so they don't have to feel the fright of actually revealing myself to another human being and the vulnerability of risking rejection. You know, that's not a very powerful move for a guy.
No.
But you know what? Walking up to a woman in the grocery store, cold, sober.
Yep.
That's a bold move.
Yes, absolutely.
And it takes guts to do that. It takes guts. It takes courage. And, you know, we're also, we're so inclined to just avoid fear when, and as men, I think, judge ourselves if we feel fear, when the truth is we all feel fear, and courage is going through it. It's not the absence of fear. It's the resistance to it. That's Mark Twain.
Right.
One of my favorite quotes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, man, I could just go on and on with you. So what's next for you? What's big stuff on the horizon for you? What are you doing?
Yeah. So I am, you know, my coaching practice is pretty lively. I really, I paused. I have been doing group programs exclusively, and I paused all of those this year because I felt called to really work with the women that I'm working with one-on-one on a deeper, more impactful level. So I'm doing, I still have, you know, one-on-one clients that I take on. And I also have a couple of courses that are actually really interesting. Primarily, I work with females. I work with high achieving women who are drinking in the gray area and are ready to up level their lives and find their authentic selves. And they realize that alcohol is getting in the way. So I work with people all over the spectrum. I felt much more called recently to work with people who are on a journey of spiritual enlightenment in some way as well. So women who identify as spiritual, as light workers, as healers, people kind of in that vein. But then, of course, I take on anyone who's ready really just to transform and grow their lives and is willing to cut out alcohol in the process. And it's really just been such important work for me, because what I see is that, yes, there are women who are out there who are just going far no matter what. But I want to speak to the women who are kind of struggling a little bit with how much they drink. They know that their life could be better without it, because how I see those women are like they've just kind of been tethered to the ground. They're like a slingshot, a giant slingshot that's been tethered and pulled back. And once you release them from that bind of alcohol that's been really just helping them to play small, they can go so far so quickly, and they can self-actualize, and they can succeed, and they can find that authenticity, and they can do the big impactful things that they are meant to do in this life. And I feel that it's my message and my purpose right now to help those women stop self-sabotaging and to actually show up for themselves and get out of their own way. And I'm just so passionate and lit up about it. So if anyone is called to do that kind of work, I would love to talk to you. I also have a kind of lower barrier to entry course that's just a 30-day alcohol-free program for someone who's kind of testing the waters, and a program that I really love that is really, really excellent. I don't talk about it nearly enough. That's a mindful dating course that helps you kind of resituate yourself to date a bit more mindfully, specifically as an alcohol-free woman.
Mm. Yeah, so that's what I got going on. Is that informed with the course?
It is a little bit. You know, it's really about, we're living in this digital age where we're thrown so many options of how we can date, and the landscape has really changed, and not for the better. And it gives us a lot, many people who use dating apps or have tried to navigate the dating scene, it's easy to get a little jaded really quickly and kind of have this attitude of, there's only players on those apps, or I'll never meet someone XYZ. And so much of it is a mindset shift and a willingness to go from lack to abundance mentality. And I have some really excellent tools to help you make those shifts and transitions and approach the scene more mindfully, because it's all about how you go into it. Your results are 100% dictated by how you approach the situation. And if you can be taught to approach the situation completely differently than anyone else who's out on the dating scene, you're absolutely going to get better results.
You know, one of the things the course has helped me with that part of my life a lot in terms of what I'm looking for, what I want, how I experience it, how I express my wants. Mm-hmm. To a potential partner, but what it helped me understand is that, you know, when I have this deep feeling of love for someone else, that's inside me.
Yeah.
That's my love. That's inside me. And it would be there. That person just helped me tap into it.
Yeah.
It doesn't even mean that person is the right one to receive it or even want, but that is that we have that. We don't need to go get it from someone else.
Right.
We need to tap into it and stay connected to it. And then the other part of it is that back to the, what we do to ourselves and our culture with long-term relationships, you know, we make these agreements. Okay, you and I met, we really like each other, we see a possible future, so I'm going to sign my name in blood to say I'm going to be with you forever, and you're going to do the same thing, and we won't allow any other possibility to enter our minds. And you know, it's just like, why would you do that? Why would you do that? Why would you not allow yourself to experience what you experience rather than try to write the script for yourself ahead of time?
Right.
And,
yeah.
And what the course has taught me as possible is, okay, you and I obviously connect. I love you. You love me. I'm invested in you. I'm going to show you who I really am, and it's safe for you to do the same. And, we're going to take a crack at this, and we're going to try to be together and see where it goes. And I promise you, no matter what happens, I will always love you as much as I do now. The shape of that love might change. But I'm going to love you no matter what. And to really love another person is to leave room for the possibility that they might be happier and better off without me.
No, absolutely. And that, you know, so many times we get caught up in our own narrative and making our own decisions that we get stuck on, and not that this is not to trash, like I'm pro marriage, I'm pro long-term relationships, but so, you know, it's also sometimes we obsess over something because we think it is the outcome that that, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've heard someone say, I don't want to break up with so-and-so because then I'd be single and I don't want to be single again. I'm like, what's worse, being single or being in a relationship with someone who you have love for, but you don't love? And also if you have love for that person, don't you want them to be with someone who just sees them and they light up their whole world and they, you know, feel so magnificent just being around them? Like, that's what you want for the other person. And that's what you want for your, should want for yourself. And if that's not the situation that you're in, then it's time to, you know, release this and say, what was this here to teach me? Mm-hmm. Was this here to teach me that I have something that I already need within me? Or is it here to teach me to heal something that I've let kind of run rampant in my life? And be aware of those things as possibilities too, no matter how much time or energy you've invested in a relationship. There's a possibility it could be something else.
At the end of the day, it takes the courage to actually look at yourself. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that's why a lot of us want to be in relationships. So we don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the reason to be in a relationship. Yeah.
No, we use it as a distraction completely.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then, between that, the way we do that in our culture and the way we handle our livelihoods, I mean, I feel like so many people are just numbed. Like, I mean, think about how many people you know who have jobs that they can't possibly like.
Yeah.
But they're used to the lifestyle that mm-hmm. it provides them, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Overworking, working at a job you don't like because you think you're supposed to, taking on a career you don't want to be at because you think that's the right thing to do, taking on social obligations that or familial obligations that aren't yours to take on just because you think that's the right thing to do, or numbing with food, with Netflix, with social media, with dating apps. I mean, everyone has their vice, but I also to believe that we can find healthier ways to express that desire mm-hmm. to escape every now and then than to put ourselves in escapism all the time.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So last question.
Sure.
If you had to go back and talk to the younger Amanda, or you had an opportunity to, mm-hmm. when was a time when she would have needed your support, and what would you say?
Oh, you know, I think there were so many times that younger Amanda and, you know, all of us were so unsure of ourselves and felt alone and felt scared. And I certainly wouldn't go back and tell my younger self to change anything, because I believe that every situation we've had is there for a reason to teach us and make us stronger and make us better teachers. But geez, if every version of our inner child doesn't need to hear this message, I don't know. Everyone does. Everyone needs to hear this, that you are complete and whole and wonderful and magnificent. And things right now might seem very hard. Things right now might seem very uncertain and scary. Maybe you're embarrassed. Maybe you feel like you're all alone. And I just want you to know that that feeling will pass, because you are a strong and resilient person, and you are meant for something more than this littleness you feel right now. But hold on to it. Let yourself feel it, because this is what will make you stronger. This is what will make you into the person who you are going to look up to and admire, years from now. And just really to cultivate that sense of you are enough. You are where you're supposed to be. Everything is okay. And you deserve to be loved and cherished and taken care of. And I'm so sorry if you have not gotten that message from the people around you or from your friends or your parents, because you are a magnificent being that deserves love and care, and I want you to feel that right now in this moment if you haven't had someone to say that to you before.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you doing this. This was fun.
Of course. Thanks so much, Tom. I appreciate you having me on here.
All right. Right, Amanda Cuda. You can find her on Instagram at Authentically Amanda. I'll have links to that and to her website in the show notes. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you did, please leave a rating or a review or both at Apple Podcasts. Every little bit helps. If you're not a subscriber, please do subscribe. Also have a YouTube channel. You can subscribe to that as well. You can follow the show on Instagram or like us on Facebook, both at The Path to Authenticity. You can find the show on Twitter at GentryCast, GENTRYCAST. You can find the show on Patreon, and by becoming a patron, gain access to supplemental content, as well as early access to episodes like this one, which will be available about 4 days before it's publicly available. So check it out, patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. Got lots of good stuff coming up, couple great guests in the works, a lot of them actually. Working on a new website, which is going to be live pretty soon. And I'm really excited about that, to share that with you guys and kind of take this whole thing to another level. So I appreciate you listening. Hope you had a happy 4th of July. Be safe. Wear a mask. Be nice. Path to Authenticity is powered by Equivox. For digital marketing and web design services, visit Equivox.com.